fabulous stuff. That is, of course, Kate Bush. My thanks to Michelle for the last 3 hours. It's me with Manflu, of course. As you can hear in my voice, I'm much sexier than normal. So if I sneeze occasionally, you will forgive me. Welcome along to the very first political 1-2-3. I'm delighted to welcome my two guests today, Mike Le Cerf and Councillors Russell Quirk. And we did ask, in fairness, Councillor Tony Sleep, but he gave his apologies. We did ask him to take part in the programme, but he did have a long-standing engagement. So where do we begin? We've got so much to talk about, gentlemen, haven't we? Let's start, Russell. First of all, let's talk about your breakaway, because you've been a Conservative councillor for a long time, and you've taken the decision, along with others, to walk away and start your own campaign. Tell me why you've done that.
Yeah, but it wasn't taken lightly at all, Mike, to be honest. I mean, yeah, I've been a Conservative councillor for 6 years. My father was a Conservative councillor in Basildon. My grandfather was a Conservative councillor in Basildon. So we have a bit of a history as Conservatives, us Quirks. We decided, I suppose, as a result of certain things that became catalysts as far as the Conservative administration are concerned, that we just could not continue to support a leadership and administration that, frankly, is broken. We have just become fed up trying to assist, trying to talk to the leadership in terms of perhaps some of the public mistakes, certainly the PR mistakes, the policy mistakes that they've been making over the last 2 or 3 years, and quite honestly, it just falls on deaf ears. You then get into the frustrating situation where that becomes public because, of course, some of us are principled, and regardless of a party line, regardless of what the leader of the local Conservatives says, when it comes to things like selling off the town hall, covering up bad deals on the William Hunter Way cinema project and so on, you know, councillors Baker, Lloyd, Clark and I were just absolutely not going to go with the flow. And that obviously created huge division. And to the point that obviously as a result of that, really, just about everything then in terms of our relationship, the relationship between us and the administration just sort of collapsed. So we resigned the whip, was the first thing that we did in early December 2012, which meant then that the four of us sat as independent councillors rather than Conservative group councillors. Nothing's changed, I have to say, from my point of view in terms of ideology. I'm still a Conservative, you know, sure I always will be. But locally and nationally are two very, very different things. And so we resigned the whip, sat as independents, and we thought that would be it. And we would obviously sit there, mind our own business and carry on speaking up for our residents and just trying to help improve Brentwood, albeit that we don't believe that the administration is assisting in that. The local Conservative Party then made a move 3 weeks later to expel us on the basis that obviously we decided to move away from the local party. And they held a bit of a kangaroo court thing at Merrymead House in early January, where they sort of bust in 30 of the old faithful Conservative membership who sat there sort of baying and drooling at the prospect of a fair bit of self-importance, it's fair to say, in being able to sit in judgment to expel us. So on the basis that as we arrived, actually, we asked, as I think is probably understandable and quite acceptable, we asked for a bit of representation. You know, could we bring someone along just to sort of, you know, shore up our corner, so to speak? And they refused. So at that point, we left. And as a consequence of that, they had the meeting in our absence without us even being there. And we found out by letter 2 days later that they had duly expelled us from the Conservative Party.
So despite, when you're talking about, let's go back right to the beginning again, when you had your first differences, when you realised you had a problem with the administration, this is business that you discussed privately, not in the chamber. This is as when you sat together down and decided policy with your fellow Conservative members.
Yeah.
You realised you just couldn't agree. It was never going to happen.
Yeah, there were too many big things. I mean, you know, I suppose the town hall, I'm sure Michael will agree, the town hall was the massive catalyst. You know, the leadership wanted to get rid of it. Let's be clear. She, leader of the council, Councillor McKinley, and her henchmen, her acolytes, wanted to dispose of it on the grounds that it was unviable. Well, our position was with the town hall, yes, it is unviable, but it's our town hall. It's sacred. It's our heritage. Let's find a way to keep it. The leadership were not listening. I mean, they were talking to developers about turning it into luxury flats. They talked to Waitrose. They'd considered demolishing it. They talked about all sorts of stuff. And that really set the temperature, I suppose, for the next year and a half, when we realised, A, that they were on the wrong road on these big, big things, that they wouldn't listen to us on behind closed doors. And then, as I say, when you then walk into the chamber and there's an agenda item that effectively says, you know, let's keep our options open on the town hall because it's not viable and we might do something with it in terms of converting it to flats. Some councillors, as indeed 17 Conservatives did, regardless of what they really think, will sit there, as they did, and go with it because the leadership tells them to. And this is where the whole political whip thing comes in, which obviously we'll perhaps talk about a little bit more. But we were just having none of it. And just as a consequence, as I say, we are where we are. But it was certainly based on lots of private, behind-closed-doors chats that then erupted into the public. Of course, the press get hold of it, and then the whole thing just snowballs, and that's where we are.
Mike Le Cerf, you must be rubbing your hands, must be in glee what's going on in the opposition.
He is, he's a happy man.
Well, it's interesting times, isn't it? I mean, what's happened over the last year especially, I mean, the Conservative administration group have lost 8 councillors in a year, which they had a massive majority of 16, 17 this time last year. It's now down to 5.
Yeah, majority of 5. Yeah.
The 16 opposition councillors. In local government, regardless of the politics, you need a strong administration, you need a strong opposition. And at the moment, what's happened now is there's an incredibly strong opposition. I mean, the last few meetings, especially with the Brentwood First members, Lib Dems, ourselves and Roger Keeble, all fighting together. We haven't got together before, but we're all fighting for what we think's right and coming out virtually on the same page of the hymn book most of the time against a really weak administration. And the last few council meetings I've been to, unfortunately I missed the one last Wednesday, but last night was another example of a very, very poor meeting. The agenda items were poorly thought through. There was things that were talked about that shouldn't have been. Incredible. It's incredible what's going on. Russell's saying about the town hall, I think it all started for us around 2 years ago with the town hall and what the administration were prepared to do in the face of public opinion to save the town hall. And we had the big march. We had 200 people nearly in the council chamber and in the gallery and in the room behind saying that they wanted to save their town hall, and the administration were willing to get rid of it. Same thing with William Hunter Way. Phil Minot's petition, well over 2,000, 3,000 odd signatures. We don't want this to go ahead. It's still going ahead. So they've only got themselves to blame, but we're enjoying it to a certain extent, I must admit.
I mean, this is sort of a repeat of what happened in Thurrock in the last 4 years, and there, the Thurrock leadership left and went over to the Labour. Had Russell come to you, would you have welcomed him with open arms?
Well, I think it's highly unlikely that Russell would do that. I mean, he's just said he's a dyed-in-the-wool Conservative. I mean, if he really wanted to repent and sign up to the Labour Party's core beliefs, then we'd probably have to talk about it. I think it's unlikely. I mean, what it is...
Wait a long time.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to happen. But it is... Locally, there's a lot of common ground with the opposition parties. The members of all parties... And we can work through that. I'm a political person. Everything's political, but I am a party political person as well. But there's a lot of local issues that you can get over the party politics and do the right thing. We've mentioned the biggies, but there's loads of things, isn't there? Bin collection, potholes, all the small things that go on in Brentwood. You're just going to fight your best for the residents. So.
It's obvious that you two, in particular, are very, very keen on your local politics, and your heart is absolutely in putting Brentwood first. Excuse them. But yeah, what about
absolutely.
What about the public images of the council? Turnouts are getting lower and lower each year. Council, I haven't got the figures what the turnout was last year, but they're nationally on the way down. So doesn't this just harm it even further, Russell, when you get splits like this? Hang on, your mic's died. That's better. Right.
There's an argument, I suppose, that the short-term answer, I think, is possibly yes. But as far as the Brentwood First thing is concerned, obviously, we would, I suppose, look at this and ask everybody else to look at this as a long-term thing. Yes, there's been infighting. We're all human. We're all going to have different differences of opinion, whether we're in the same party or not. What we're trying to do now is extol the virtues of a different political approach. And the whole Brentwood First thing is born out of, and obviously the name speaks for itself, that we just want to put Brentwood first. And that's before national political ideology, and that's certainly before I suppose what you could also term as democratic dictatorship, where you have a political whip that specifically says to its members, in the case of the Conservatives, and I don't speak for Mike or the Lib Dems here because they have a completely different way of going about things, but the Conservative approach is if you disagree with a Conservative leader, whereby I think that leader, as used to happen in the old days with the former leader, Brandon Lewis, the leader would either, you know, put something forward that you naturally agreed with, because hopefully you all did and you were all Conservatives and so on, or if not, you would have a debate and the leader would be good enough to win the argument on the merits. That hasn't happened for 2 or 3 years. So what now happens is you've got these sinister Conservative Party whips who will intervene and say, well, look, whatever the policy is, whatever the approach is, you must vote for it. So whether it's the town hall, William Hunter Way, whether it's cancelling the Saturday lighting up celebrations that the council did 2 years ago and diluted them to a rubbish Thursday afternoon that was an utter disaster, or the ludicrous position where we sat there with an agenda in front of us a few months ago where it was proposed that the council should ban all religious gatherings on council land, all of this sort of thing, either by definite whip, three-line whip as they called it, whereby the whips will say, this is what you must vote for, you must do it, otherwise you're going to be disciplined, or by implied whip, which is, this is the wish of the leader, if you're a Conservative, you'll do it. That's what we are trying to get away from. So within the Brentwood First organisation, there are no whips. We're not told what to do. Hopefully we mostly agree on things because it's local, not national, and we all agree that we want, you know, we want value for money, we want to improve the town, we want William Hunter Way to be the best it can possibly be, we want to try and make the best out of the town hall, we want to be innovative, we want to be entrepreneurial, etc. But when it comes to disagreement within our group, we're allowed to disagree. And we're allowed to walk into the council chamber. And if Councillor Lloyd says, do you know what, I agree with directly elected mayors, and I as Councillor Quirk say, well, I don't, well, that's fine. And we'll have the debate in private and we'll disagree with each other very nicely in public. And if that's the way the vote goes, that we end up being split, so be it. That is what people elect us to do. We're supposed to be democratic representatives of our electorate. We're not supposed to do what we're told by the party. We're supposed to do what we're told by the residents. And that's what Brentwood First is about.
Fantastic. Okay.
A couple of years ago when they had the town hall vote, and it was obviously won with the support of nearly half the Conservatives, the Lib Dems, Labour and the Independent, that was probably the last time that there was people were seen to be making choices on what they believed in within the Conservative group. It was Russell and I think 7 or 8 Conservatives.
11 Conservatives.
11 Conservatives, and the Conservatives lost the vote, and that's how we saved the town hall, by getting very passionate. And we do sometimes step into the realms of overdoing it a bit
because
we get
fighting,
we do get very passionate about things like the town hall. And, you know, it was a smaller item last night, but it was about a closing of a car park exit. But it was still something to get passionate about when your residents are directly affected by that decision. And I haven't seen it this year or last year, probably. Now they're, you know, like Russell said, the whip is out and they are all voting on message. And that's a worry, because you do then get that dictatorship. You know, it's all, you're going to follow the leader or you're going to go the way of the Brentwood First guys.
Yeah, that was a really good example last night. There was another item on the agenda last night, which was about the Chatham Way car park, which 2 years ago changed from what they call pay and display, you know, where you pay at the beginning, to pay on exit, whereby you then are allowed to pay at the end, whereby you pay for the amount of time you've
been in there. Yeah, I've got a horror story about that in a minute, but just go and carry on. Yeah.
Okay. So the council have proposed to change it back again. So we'll now be going back to pay and display, which is where we were 3 years ago. So at great expense, the council put the barriers in. They now want to take them out again and go back to pay and display. There's a couple of problems with that. The first problem is that what that then allows is traffic wardens to start patrolling car parks. So when you're 10 minutes and 1 second over your elapsed time. Bearing in mind,
are you talking about 20p an hour? That's something that, whatever it is. In Havering.
It's 80p an hour, isn't it? So you pay for your hour because you think you're going to be an hour, and you nip into, you know, Nigel Clark's salon, have your hair done, you have a coffee too many, and it takes an hour and 11 minutes. You'll come out and you've got a £30 parking ticket.
Yeah.
So that is, I think, the reason that the Conservatives have proposed to change it. So it's a flawed proposal. And we all spoke last night to say you shouldn't do this. Anyway. At the same time as we're speaking on behalf of our residents to stop this mistake, yet another mistake being made by the Conservative administration, we then start analysing the consultation which the Conservatives apparently have done. And they've sent out all these questions, all these questionnaire questions to local residents and businesses, and they've had a load of responses back. And it turns out, first of all, that they got one of the questions wrong. Instead of asking the question, do you support the Crown Street exit of the car park closing? They've actually worded it as, do you support Crown Street closing? Completely different thing.
Absolutely.
But they still wanted to go ahead with the proposal on the basis of the flawed consultation. But the really scary thing was, there were 35 people came back and said, don't change the current parking regime in Chatham Way. Do not do it. And there were some real passionate responses from residents. 35 said, don't change it. 20 said, do change it. So they've done a consultation. They've got a result that 2-1 says, don't change it. So what was the proposal by the Conservatives? Change it.
Okay, we'll come back to that.
Not listen to your residents.
We'll have to come back in a minute. Incidentally, I was in Brighton on Saturday, 3 hours, 2 minutes, £18. Ooh. How good was that? Mm. If you'd like to take part in the programme today, we have an email address, radio@phoenixfm.com. We can read your emails instantly. Or on Twitter, the Mike A. Jones is so the.
Yeah, that was me.
All right.
No, not really. Okay. That was ages ago.
It's a great thing so that. There's no it's absolutely transparent, so everybody can see exactly what goes on in the chamber, as does the House of Commons, right? The other night.
There's a big butt coming here, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a big butt, because all hell broke loose, didn't it? Over something, it seemed quite petty. We seem to be talking about gritting. Mike, how did that happen? What was your view on that entire incident?
Well, it was interesting to start with, that it was one of the rare occasions where myself and Councillor Morrissey didn't attend, because we normally go. We do go. You know, we're that sad that we do go to.
We forego the soap operas
and go to the town hall council chamber for our entertainment when we're not on the panel. But we weren't there last Wednesday, so we watched it. Oh, this is how sad we are. We watched it while we was having dinner, Mike, at the dinner table on the computer.
That's fair enough.
And it was. We only watched the first hour, so we saw the initial. There was two bits to it, really, wasn't there?
The start of the meeting,
where from it was like from the get go.
Seven minutes in.
Yeah, the Conservative councillors were just rampantly shouting over the mics. There's real aggressive sort of pictures on the webcam of them off mic shouting, which is not usual because normally the camera's on the person who's actually got their mic on. But it was incredible. We watched it for an hour and then it went, turned it off. Only to, be following it on Twitter later to see what had actually happened. And we have watched it since, but I think Russell was there. He can fill you in on what happened at the end of the meeting, but it was pretty, pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was a very turbulent meeting. We were talking about lots of very, very important things like waste plans that are the council's supposed waste strategy for the next 4 years, food recycling, which is being introduced, which is a great thing, but... as opposition members, our job on behalf of residents is obviously to hold the administration to account and ask questions that maybe, the man in the street, the woman in the street would ask. So I asked a question, for instance, which is, look, this is great. Orange bag food recycling on a weekly basis. Welcomed. Going to vote for it. Fantastic. But you've only got the funding for 4 years. What happens? What happens then? Then asked another question about the bring sites. The sites you get at, for instance, Sainsbury's and Crown Corner and so on, where you can take your orange bags along if your garage gets too full up with them. And we said, look, it's in the agenda here that you're considering what they call an opportunity to close some. Does that mean you're going to close some? Anyway, we pushed the point, as you would imagine, as we're local politicians. And as Mike said, all of a sudden, the vitriol, the abuse, the insult start flying over from the Councillor Hossacks and the Councillor Parkers of this world. So it was quite incredible. So it was a very tetchy meeting anyway, 2.5 hours long. But we sort of got to the end of it. The chairman, Tony Sleeper, again, I know obviously you've invited here and for whatever reason hasn't chosen to be here to defend himself, in fairness, but he didn't finish the meeting. He took another item of urgent business, as it is, at the end of the agenda from Councillor Minot, who wanted to talk about grip bags and the fact that we have this bonkers approach now, as of the last couple of years, where the council's answer to gritting certain pavements, particularly those outside libraries, old people's homes and so on, is just to let councillors get in their cars and go to the depot, pick up a load of salt bags, take them out to their residence and sit there with a shovel spreading the grit out, which actually some of us have done. But when you've got, poor Madeleine Enwood, who's in her 70s and,
people... She's not going to do it, is she?
Not going to happen. And no. Phil Minot hasn't got a car. I mean, it's flawed. It's stupid. Mm-hmm. So Phil Minot, rightly so, wanted to raise the question of let's address this, debate it and maybe think of something new. So Councillor Sleep took the item. We were busily sort of starting to talk about it and all the mics were on and so on. I looked around and all of a sudden, Councillor Parker, Councillor Hossack and whoever else, all the other Conservatives just got up and left and the meeting had not finished. So we carried on and all of a sudden, the Vice Chairman, Madeleine Henwood, gets up and leaves. And then Tony Sleep, the Chairman, gets up and leaves. And you can see on the webcast just this bare chair for I've seen it. So and so we carried on because the meeting hadn't finished. So that's what happened. It was, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was, talk about abandoned ship.
And again, it brings brings the council into disrepute almost, doesn't it? That sort of behaviour, if half the elected members walk out for whatever reason.
The cynical amongst us might say that they were rehearsing losing power, and that's why they scuttled out of the chamber quite as quickly as they
okay.
did.
I must take a quick break again. Let's just do the national news headlines.
Hitting the headlines first for your area.
These are the top stories.
This is Phoenix FM.
Thank you. These are the top stories at 1:30. The Department of Health puts cash over patient care. That's according to the inquiry into failings at a hospital where up to 1,200 patients died unnecessarily. The report says bosses at Stafford Hospital tolerated bad news. It makes 290 recommendations for a zero-tolerance approach to poor standards. In the past few minutes, it's been confirmed that Royal Bank of Scotland has been fined more than £200 million by US regulators over its role in the LIBOR rigging scandal. MEPs have voted for sweeping reforms of the controversial EU fisheries policy. The package includes measures to restore fish stocks after years of failed conservation measures and to return profitability to fishing communities. Police have raided 35 addresses across the county as part of a crackdown on people smuggling gangs. The UK boarding agency is targeting criminals who bring illegal immigrants into the country in the back of lorries through Channel ports. And all dogs in England are going to have to be microchipped by 2016 as part of new plans to help reunite pet owners with their animals. Right at the moment, we're right in the middle of our very first political 1-2-3 show. My guests are Mike Lasurf and Russell Quirk, and we're talking everything, all about local Brentwood politics. Let's talk about the Tesco's Worley story. This is the story of the disused pub on the hill. Karen Chilvers was in here last week and William Lloyd were in here talking on their case. I've seen other councils in other press journals this week complaining that people have been jumping on the bandwagon. Mike, what's your view on the whole situation?
Well, jumping on the bandwagon. I mean, first of all, I wasn't around. I missed this one as well. I wasn't around Saturday. I was in London at a Labour sort of policy event. But I shop in the Woolley area every day because I go down to the station, I get my paper and chewing gum, I get my hair cut in the barber shop. So, you know, I'm a regular user of the Woolley shops. I think, it's a two sides thing, isn't it? There's been the Lib Dems and Brentwood First members now, William, getting together to organise the day to promote shopping in Woolley, which is a great thing to do and hopefully give the shops a boost and make people think about, you know, using their local shops a little bit more and maybe not getting in the car, which is great. And I know that Will's been doing some work as well with traders groups and that's been going on as well. So I think, you know, there's room for everyone, isn't there, to you know, get on. I know it's a story because apparently behind the scenes there was a lot of political ding-dong around, you know, who was going to get involved in whose campaign and the Gazette photographers were out sort of covering both sides of the coin on Saturday. So I just think if everyone should be supporting the traders in Woolley and in the High Street. I'm a member of the Renaissance Group, which is interested in supporting all the shopping centres in the borough. So I think the maybe some of the councillors are a little bit guilty of winding each other up a bit too much and then putting it out there in the public domain for others to feast on.
Really. It's a sad fact of life as well. The pub trade is dying, hasn't it? Because the drink drive laws that came in and price of beer, the beer tax has gone up. I can't remember those horrendous figures over the years. And pubs aren't being used. And there's some horrible figure of how many pubs close every year.
It's one a day.
In something like that in the United Kingdom. And unless you turn it into a restaurant or a theme something or whatever, then you know what happens to these buildings? Where do you stand on this, Russell?
Well, I think a very sensible approach from Karen Chilvers and William Lloyd, actually. And, you know, what they've very quickly realised is that, unfortunately, the council can't do anything about Tesco's taking over these pubs. They don't need change of use because it's what's called permitted development. So the planning laws that are, you know, decreed from above say that if it's a pub, it can also be a convenience store. So there's no point fighting it apart from the potential issues insofar as, I don't know, lights on signs, you know, parking issues and so on, but there is actually nothing the council can do about it. What William Lloyd's going to do, and I'm sure supported by Karen Chilvers, is to try and move a motion to council to see if we can incorporate in our forthcoming local development plan, which is brought in 2015, that actually there is an element of permission that's needed so the councillors can at least debate this on behalf of residents and sometimes say yes, sometimes say no. I think, you know, you've got to hand it to Tesco that obviously they provide something that people want. I mean, they provide, you know, great quality, great value and all the rest of it. So I don't want to sound like an advert for them, but, you know, I don't think you can knock them. So, you know, I'm all for, you know, free markets, competition and so on. And hopefully, you know, Worley traders will see that actually if they step up in terms of quality service, opening hours and all the rest of it, they can actually compete with Tesco's. So I think it's interesting. I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And let's be honest, when a Tesco's opens, it doesn't appear that history says that the statistics say that all of a sudden every shop around them closes. I mean, you look at Hepburn's in Shenfield. Has been there a lot longer than Tesco's, and I'm sure it outsells them in terms of joints.
They are a little crafty, though, Tesco's. I mean, looking at history, 20 years ago, they moved everything out, didn't they? They built these huge superstores out of town and half killed the trade in the town, and then they left the Londises and the Co-ops to run the small ones, and they thought, hang on a minute, there's a little bit more meat on the bone here, and then they're slowly moving back in the metro stores.
But the population that have concerns about this, traders or not, you know, what they need to do is do something about it, which is what Karen and William are trying to do, which is to try and get people to go out and promote shopping locally. I mean, they had, I think it refers to it in the Gazette, you know, they had people that were popping into Worley shops to buy stuff from Londis or from, you know, wherever it might be, where they were people that haven't previously done that, even though they only live maybe half a mile away. And it really did open their eyes. So I think it's a fantastic campaign. I think the front of the Gazette today is a real shame. I think Karen and William have done a great job in terms of raising the profile of this. I do think, and you know, shoot me down in flames by all means, that Councillor Russell and his Conservative paymasters have tried to jump on the bandwagon. They've tried to piggyback this. I have no doubt at all that Councillor Russell's obviously done his bit in the past in terms of an involvement with local traders, but he certainly hasn't promoted anything like Karen and William have. And I think it's a shame that, yeah, you ended up with the ridiculous spectacle of a photographer having to cross from one side of the street to another to take two separate photos of effectively the same thing. But in fairness, Karen Chilvers and William Lloyd invited Will Russell along and Louise McKinley along. Louise McKinley sent an email back saying, no, I'm not interested in getting involved with the Shop Worley Day. Read into that what you will.
Yeah. Okay.
The Tories have got form on this as well. I mean, a few years ago, I was involved in a campaign in on the Newham estate, East Ham Crescent shops, and to support a local trader. And then we, you know, just... as we do as ward councillors, talking to people about supporting, all of a sudden there was this great big, you know, 2 months before the election, petition going round by the local Conservatives to do exactly what we've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years and just make a big sort of impact splash on it. And then you see, you know, your photos in the paper outside the shop, and absolutely, then the local Tories have got a few of their gang together to get to counter that. And it's... You know, it's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
It's the old, you know, there's a bandwagon, jump on it. And that's exactly what the Conservatives have done here. So, you know, I'm sure they've got the best intentions, but they could have just got together.
Okay. We've talked about Gritgate. That's what I'm going to call it. we haven't talked about is Old House. Okay. Mike, let's start with you. What's your stand on the story of Old House? Can you just explain a little bit of the history of Old House? Listeners who don't know.
Very similar to the town hall, and around the time that we were talking about the town hall and campaigning to keep that open, people were talking then, and they've been for years, about the Old House and our culture and our heritage and what that building means to Brentwood. An old grade two listed, isn't it?
Grade two, yes, it is. Yeah.
Listed building that Brentwood people love. You know, I was born in the town, I grew up, it's been there forever. We want it to stay there, it will stay there as a building. Regardless, but the issue around the Old House now is who's going to take that on in the future, and who's going to
is it derelict now?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. The council moved there. They had an office in there that were dealing with all the lettings and things like that. It was they had a cafe and meeting rooms. For the last 2 years, it's been closed. But again, it's this thing about entrepreneurialism and actually looking at an asset and saying, do we want to keep this asset within our, you know, our gift and it, you know, as a council asset that we can use in the future, or do we just want to say it's going to cost too much to do up? Let's sell it to someone who's going to invest in it and let them make the money on it. You know, that's the debate that's going on at the moment. It's a real shame. The town hall would have gone. This is going to go to you know, someone who's probably not, you know, not a Brentwood person, and they're just going to, you know, do it up as flat, sell it on them.
Isn't that what you do as a councillor? If you had the money to invest, wouldn't you not turn it into flats or whatever?
No. The plan was to do exactly that. I mean, because it's sat there derelict, and it's not just public property, but it's a heritage building because it's Grade 2 listed. I mean, it's got roots back in the 15th century, this thing, which is, again, Mike's said, I suppose, like the town hall, something that if the council owns it, it can protect it and it can be in control of it. But when I was asset panel chairman, which obviously I haven't been since the beginning of December because I resigned the whip of the Conservative Party, so then obviously automatically you lose your senior roles from the administration, funny enough. I spent a few weeks working on a plan with architects and officers whereby by investing money, taxpayer money, public money, in that building, we could convert it back to its former glory, turn it into 7 nice flats, which then obviously would add massive value to the building. So, and at the moment, because it's so ruinous, I mean, it literally is holes in the roof, rats, the whole thing. To restore it to its glory and turn it into habitable dwellings does 2 things. Obviously, it saves the building, but it also then, if the council keep it, and this is the entrepreneurial bit, which I've been desperately trying to impart on the Conservative administration about the last 2 years, but falling on complete and utter deaf ears, that if you then invest that money so that you've got an asset that's automatically worth more money for a start, so 7 flats in Brentwood, Grade 2 listed, lovely high ceilings, sash windows, blah, blah. Take it from me, declare an interest, I'm an estate agent. They're worth about 300 grand each, 2.1 million quid. So you're no worse off in terms of what you've invested. You can sell it if you have to and get the money back. But what it provides is an income of between 80 and 90,000 pounds to the council and therefore the taxpayer, which goes towards keeping council tax down. It goes towards frontline services and so on. So it's a no-brainer. There is risk, absolutely, and the risk is a matter of perception. If you're very risk-averse, you shouldn't do it. If you're entrepreneurial and innovative, which this council now actually is starting to say, well, I suppose, yes, we need to be, because obviously budgets are tight and obviously we need to provide income. Well, then some of these things you have to look at and bite the bullet and do. But unfortunately, the Conservatives have just said the other night on this particular subject, no, too risky, we're not doing it, sell it, which is exactly what they tried to do with the town hall. And goodness knows what else they'll do similar with in terms of other assets that are important to us.
The worst thing that can happen, though, surely, is delay, because then the house just falls into further dilapidation.
Well, it's been delayed already. I mean, 2004 saw a resolution by the Conservatives, it wasn't 2004, but 2006, to sell it. So it's then sat there empty doing nothing since. And I think it's actually been empty for longer than 2 years, I think 3 or 4 years probably. Yeah. There's already been delay. So my plan was to try and get on with it and actually do something with it now. Now they've decided to sell it, yes, they may well be further delayed. And of course, because of their delay for the 3 or 4 years between deciding to sell it and me coming up with this other plan, it's probably lost £300,000 or £400,000 in value because it's so knackered as a consequence.
And it's the difference between selling it and getting the capital or doing it up and getting some revenue out of it. We're crying out for revenue. We haven't got enough money to spend on services. We need revenue coming in so that we can keep the council tax low and we can keep the frontline services as we want them to be. If you keep selling everything, number one, you'll end up with nothing left, but the capital has got to be used on capital projects.
But the irony is, you know, we introduced what we called an asset strategy. And the asset strategy, which the council's never had in all its history before, we introduced, all members agreed with it, that we would turn our dead assets into income. So some assets will be sold, like the Worley Training Centre, for instance, which is, you know, an old school that we inherited in the 80s that's been empty for 5 or 6 years. It has no heritage value, so we said, okay, we will sell that, and that will now be sold to developers. That's all been agreed. Use the money from that to do other things with, such as the old house. And even though that strategy is in place, the administration just turned their back on it, and all they want to do, and I have to say, Mike, I'm afraid, because the majority of the people that are running this council are either ex or current bankers, they just want to bank the money, seriously. But Mike's point is a really important one. There's a massive difference between capital and revenue. In local government, you can only use capital money, i.e. the receipt of money from assets, for other capital purposes. So you sell the old house for 500 grand, you can buy something else for 500 grand. You can't use it to mitigate council tax. Income, in terms of rental from those buildings, you can use to mitigate council tax and for frontline services. And that seems to be entirely lost on Councillor McKinley and her henchmen, I'm afraid.
Okay, right, let's just change the subject slightly. Thurrock Council have recently started to share services with Barking and Redbridge, and Barking and Dagenham, beg your pardon. Is this something that Brentwood Council is considering, or are you already doing it?
Yeah, we're doing it. Yeah, I mean, there's if there's As long as the residents don't suffer. I mean, sometimes these things are a false economy. And again, you're chasing the saving. We've seen so many redundancies in the town hall over the last 3 or 4 years. And services are suffering. And the quality of what's being delivered is suffering. Because we lost a lot of experience. I'm all for sharing services. If the quality's there, we're saving money and we're providing the service that we were providing. But that's not proving the case. So in my... This is why I support the town hall. We do need to make money out of the town hall and do something different with it. But, you know, my ideal is that some of the staff that we've got to rebuild that staff base. We've got interims. We've got, people in hired on £40 an hour.
£630 a day.
Yeah, well. we should be investing in our own staff, our own officers and people that live and work in Brentwood, supporting us to run the council as officers, because it's a false economy. You'll save some money 1 year or two, but then you realise that no one knows what you're talking about when you say, can you come down to Orchard Avenue? You say, where's that? You know. So.
Okay. Russell, let's go back to Brentwood first. One argument against what you've done is that people say, well, hang on a minute, I didn't vote for Russell Quirk. I voted for the Conservative Party. Mm-hmm. What about that?
Well, they did vote for me. I mean, they don't vote for the Conservative Party in terms of where they put their cross. They actually vote for a candidate. And in every respect, you know, the candidate is the one that has, you know, the legal office, if you like. But yes, I take the point. I was elected on a Conservative ticket. And now I'm not, albeit that if you want to have a conversation with me about Conservative ideology, you won't find that many probably that, you know, would or Conservatives that would disagree with me in terms of that ideology being the same as them. But it is an important point, and there will be people saying, well, look, you four councillors have sort of jumped ship. Maybe you should test to see whether the electorate accept what you've done by holding an immediate by-election. And I do take the point, and I see that logic. But the reason we won't be doing that is simply because we're trying to advance the cause of independence within local politics for the good of the town, not just now, but in 2, 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time. We think that particularly with regard to the Conservative Party, the way they run things is, you know, is morally corrupt, insofar as how decisions are made. Now, if we as an entity don't get any traction, there's no purchase, if you like, insofar as what we're trying to advance, then there will never be independent candidates and independent councillors being elected in Brentwood. So most of us are actually up for re-election in 2015. Councillor Clark's up in 2014. But Phil Baker, myself and William Lloyd have got another 2 and a bit years to go. We will use that 2 years in a very valuable way to make sure that we do exactly as we've set out to do as Brentwood First, and then people can test us. And if they want to vote independently, great. But if we stood down now, although I see the logic, what was the point? Because we won't get re-elected because we haven't got the message out there.
Okay, Mike, what's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that it costs a lot of money to hold by-elections between the main elections. So I think it is interesting times. I said at the start, I think the county council elections will be really interesting if Brentwood First fielding candidates, which I presume they are.
We are.
And locally, I mean, Nigel's jumped ship twice. So, you know, he's elected as a Lib Dem.
He likes to keep life
interesting.
Went
to the Conservative Party, who were quite happy to accept him. And they didn't want him to stand down and go for re-election. So I think it's up to the electorate at the election time. You know, there's lots of other reasons why there's by-elections. But if you change parties, it's going to be up to the electorate within a year or two.
That's another thing that's always bothered me. Something you just mentioned there, Russell, about, you know, you're all up for election 2014, Nigel's up for 2015. Why is this? Why isn't everybody up in 2014 again in 2018?
Well, some are, I think. I mean, Thurrock, I think, they're all up.
Yeah, they are. Well, that's only just changed. But you're not alone. Hundreds of councils do this. But
there's two ways that you can decide. You can either be all up, which means that every 4 years you're all up, which means that every 4 years the council could change its political balance. Or you end up operating how Brentwood has, where you're up in thirds. So out of 4 years, 3 of those years you have elections. So a third of your councillors are up in year one, year two, year three. Then you have a break. Then it obviously starts again. I suppose certainly from the incumbent's point of view, the last thing they want is a situation where they have an unlucky election that happens to be the one whereby, for whatever reason, particularly with national politics in people's minds, etc., you know, it would kick that political party out of office. But you know, there's two sides to the argument. You know, I mean, democracy is democracy. And if you're up every 4 years, well, then, you know, then so be it. Then I suppose if you lose power, you take it on the chin because it's for a reason.
There's a continuity to being up in thirds because you can only lose, you know, up to a third of your councillors, and it's probably only two or three that would change.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And also, I mean, councillors, we have to work hard all year round because it's always, you're always, you know, if you're being cynical, we're always working towards the election the next year and trying to get our candidate out there and keep going. I think a lot of areas where they're up here every 4 years, you might see a little lull in their activity and it builds up again coming election time.
There is an alternative. There's an alternative, of course. You know, the likes of Robin Tilbrook, who's, I think, has been on Phoenix FM a couple of times, that is the chairman of the English Democrats. He favours directly elected mayors, as indeed do the Conservative Party in the top 12 cities of the UK, whereby you wouldn't have a leader, you wouldn't have, and you still have a council, but you'd have a directly elected leader, but that elected leader would not be elected by Conservative councillors. Of course, councillors that are paid by the leader in terms of special responsibility allowances and responsibilities, etc. But that directly elected mayor would actually be elected by the public every 4 years, which I entirely favour, because, of course, you know, the administration is beholden to the public and the taxpayer, not to those councillors.
Absolutely. I suppose we should be grateful we're not Americans, really, because the system over there just horrifies me. Where, you know, Obama, last time around, he 2 years into his run, he's starting to campaign already for the next time. That's, to me, that's all right. He should be out there doing his job, and councillors should be out there doing their job.
And they have midterms. But see, what I like about the American system is everybody's elected. Police chiefs, fire chiefs, judges. I mean, I favour that because then everybody's accountable. And yes, it politicises everything. But as Mike said right at the beginning, politics is everything, I'm afraid. You know, the phone you buy, the food you eat, you know, the car you drive, everything has an element of politics to it. So I'm afraid that's a fact of life.
Right. Very last question because we're almost out of time. What do you hope to achieve after year one with Brentwood First?
We're going to field candidates in the county elections. So obviously we hope to make great ground there. In fairness, it's a bit of a dummy run, but what we will be looking to achieve in 2014 is winning a significant amount of seats as Brentwood First in Brentwood in the borough elections.
Thank you. Mike, same question. What about Labour Party in Brentwood at the end of the year? What are you hoping to achieve?
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, we've had the last two or three years, we've managed, you know, we've held on. I was down to being the lone councillor for a couple of years. We've got Julie in now. We're looking confident, hopefully, and it's down to the electorate, but we are working hard in Brentwood South to win that in 2014, or if it might be up before. And looking outside, as you know, other wards and seeing where we might be able to pick up a few. It's always hard for Labour in Brentwood. It's a Conservative town, but we're still, you know, around after all these years, and hopefully we'll
yeah, as are on. As a, you know, you're a replicant of Havering as well, aren't you? Because they're the minority party there, and the Residents Association are really busy
with
there.
Our membership of our party in Brentwood, three times at the Liberal Democrats. It's just that, you know, the first past the post system doesn't reflect that in elections, but we, in a general election, we get 10% of the vote, and we've got 5,000-6,000 people rooting for us.
But the Havering thing's really interesting. It's a bit like Billericay in the old days, actually, and Tendring, where residents' associations, which effectively Brentwood First are, is the dominant political force because they stand up not for political ideology and whips, as we've said, but, you know, for the people of the town.
Gentlemen, we could talk all day. Thank you so much for coming in. This has been the very first political debate on 1-2-3, and I know that you're both very welcome back, and I know you'll come in any time I ask you. Next, I will be asking Mrs. McKinney to come in, and I will be asking Mr. Sleep again, and Mr. Cossack, etc., to their side of the story. So that's what debate is all about. Mike, you've got a record for me. It's your wife's birthday. I'll put it on after the news, but if you'd like to just do the dedication for her.
I will. It's Julie, the other Labour councillor in Brentwood. It's Julie's birthday today. She's...
Don't tell us how old she is.
I won't. Let's not do that either. But... yeah, I mean, she's a lovely birthday. She's a member of the planning committee, so we'll be at the council chamber tonight, 7 o'clock.
Happy birthday, Julie.
Happy birthday, Julie.
Gentlemen, again, thank you very, very much indeed. As I said, we'll invite you back in, I'm sure, many, 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 many times over the next year. And
thank you very much
for your participation. Yes. Right, that's it for the first hour. Second hour, we'll be talking entertainment and sport. Hopefully, I'm going to try and get hold of John Steele, manager of Daglam Redbridge, as well, to tell us his thoughts on last week's game and what's coming up this weekend.